Porto, Spain, match template 1.0. 1, dominate possession. 2, Morata misses sitter. 3, get caught on the break. 4, Luis Enrique spins around and points at somebody at random on the bench. 5, more possession. 6, bloke holds up board with number on it. 7, speed up a bit. 7, 8, almost score. Yes, I'm afraid we saw Spain at their most frustrating, but such are the pitfalls of making predictions after one game, they might yet win it. And Alvaro Morata might win the golden boot. Bet responsibly, kids. Which is not on that, by the way. Welcome to Elton and John's La Liga Weekly. We've just seen the first 0-0 draw of the tournament. We'll have a quick look at what else we've seen at the Euros, which have already, by the way, been won by England, because we only have two settings when it comes to English football. One, champions elect. Two, lazy, overpaid, failure turnips. We'll have none of your subtlety here. Thank you very much. Scotland lost because a Czech striker scored from the halfway line, but somehow we're all blaming the Scotland centre-back who had the shot at the other end of the pitch. And the best news of the tournament so far is that a man with my hairline has scored a goal at the Euros. 37-year-old Goran Pendev, North Macedonia's youngest ever scorer at a major tournament. On a serious and grave note, best wishes to Christian Eriksen. It would be great to see him back playing again sometime soon. But of course, the most important thing is that he is fit and well, and a proper legend of Danish football. Yeah, and his record in international football, or his record in club football, is brilliant. But well done to everybody involved who sprung to help him. And fingers crossed for Christian Eriksen. Right, Terry, let's get down to the football. We'll start with Spain, shall we? Because this is the La Liga Weekly Podcast. We'll get on to the best of the rest as we go. Oh, man, that was frustrating, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think it was the most predictable game of football I've ever watched, which leads me to being totally baffled as to why Luis Enrique didn't have any preconceived ideas going into the game, how Sweden were going to play, how he was going to deal with the threat. So it just the sheer fact he played Rodri and Koke in central midfield. So two holding midfield players. In fairness to Koke, he didn't play that role in this particular match, but that's where he's been playing all season for Atletico Madrid. It's his 50th cap, I think, 51st cap, hasn't scored a goal. I think it was over 70 appearances between him and Rodri, and I think it was one goal. So if you're playing against a team that you have intel on and you're fully aware they're going to sit back and play two up front, but they play two banks of four, why on earth would you go with two holding non-scoring midfield players when you have other players at your disposal and more importantly other players that are not at your disposal because you've chosen not to pick them? So I think that's going to be the issue that I'm going to be focusing on in this podcast, the random team selection, the random squad selection, and the random substitutions, which you alluded to in the intro, jokingly, but it is all pretty serious stuff. So it's quite baffling to see what Luis Enrique's plan is, even to the extent that he took far too long to put Gerard Moreno on. He put other players on before him. Approaching 10-minute spell of Ferran Torres being the centre-forward once he took off Morata. I just don't see enough goals in the team. I don't see enough quality in the team. I see enough quality in La Liga from the Spanish players. But to be quite brutally truthful, I don't think he's picked the best squad available in terms of quality, experience. And also, there doesn't appear to be any method in his selection and thinking. And I firmly believe it's going to harm Spain in their attempts to try and do well to win the European Championships. I think they'll go through the group, but that's not given. If you continue to play like that, other teams are going to play against Spain as Sweden did. And he's going to have to come up with something different, something better, to enable them to break down and hope from somewhere in this squad, I'm not convinced it's there, find that quality in the final third, whether it's crossing the ball, passing the ball, or shooting a goal. So I think there's some interesting issues that we're going to witness next when they play Saturday against Poland, which won't be an easy game. There won't be any easy games in this tournament for Spain. They'll dominate possession, which they did in the first half. They were quite bright in the first half. Morata should have scored. Moreno probably should have scored in the second half when he came on. But other than that, not too many clear-cut chances. Sweden actually matched them. I was looking at the statistics. Sweden had 31 passes after 28 minutes. That's almost a pass per minute successful rate. It's absolutely ludicrous. And by the end of the game, it was almost a comfortable clean sheet for them. Olsen made some really good saves. But you could argue, you know, Isak hit the post. He set up the chance. I think it was for Berg, wasn't it? You should have missed the sitter.
Yeah.
The biggest chance of the game. Missed the sitter. So as you said, you know, it's the blueprint, isn't it, for Spain? Dominate possession, get caught on the break, concede a couple of really good chances. They had luck on this occasion that it wasn't costly. So it's... I wouldn't say worrying because I'm not lying awake at night having sleepless nights over Luis Enrique in Spain and watching a tournament of football. But I don't see at the moment, things can change, but I don't see at the moment a way that Spain can trouble the big hitters in this tournament.
Because they end up, there's always 11 decent players on the pitch for Spain, isn't there? Because they've got such strength in depth.
They can all play.
Yeah.
All of them can play. They're all ballers. They all can play football. They're all good on the ball, good touch, good skill, good technique, but there are still, in my opinion, better players not selected.
Yeah, yeah. So what, this is the most difficult question I've ever asked you, Terry. What do you think he will do for the next game?
I was really expecting something. I was quite worried then when you said that, because we've done a few podcasts and commentaries together. And I was worried what you were going to ask me. I have no idea. I think what we've seen from him on his return to the national team manager, he's pretty stubborn. And I think he'll stick to his guns. I wouldn't be surprised, John, to see him play the same starting 11 in a belief that he was right. And he'll prove to people, come what may, that he's right, to the extent it might cost him success in this competition. Relative success. You hear Fabregas, who I think has been brilliant. I've taken a liking to all the foreign pundits so far, I have to be honest, because I'm not sure whether I'm tired of the ones that we keep seeing every week throughout the year. But they speak a different language. I'm not talking in terms of they speak French, Dutch, Spanish. They don't follow the same standard cliches, standard textbook stuff that we get from the pundits we see on a regular basis. So it's refreshing to hear. And listening to Fabregas saying that the expectation levels are low in Spain and that Luis Enrique likes the expectation levels being low, that's because he's done his utmost to drag everyone down.
He's a genius.
And everyone's thinking, yep, we ain't going to win this because he hasn't picked this player, he hasn't picked that player. We don't think he's got a plan. He's never picked Pablo Sarabia before and he's picked him for the first time in this tournament and then puts him on early in the second half. The expectations are low because Luis Enrique has made them low. So it's a cunning plan. If it is a cunning plan on his part, then, you know, fair play to him. But it's not looking ideal at the moment.
No, but it's the opening game of the tournament, isn't it? And
yeah,
you know, teams get better and they've always got 11 decent players out there, so they always have a chance, don't they? One of those decent players, more than decent, of course, is Pedri, Terry. At the age of 18, yeah. He plays with remarkable maturity, it must be said.
His confidence, and I think it took him a while. He was a slow burner in the game against Sweden, I have to be honest. I think he was on the fringes of it in the first half. In the second half, when they needed to step up a gear, he was the only player that was doing that. You know, where it's those little touches, little passes, little skills to get himself out of trouble. He's a remarkable player. Thankfully, Luis Enrique is playing him. Somehow, I still think he would be better served by playing the one holding midfield player, like they do at Barcelona, for instance, Busquets. I know he's not available. You could have played Rodri, or you could have played Koke as the holding midfield player. And then someone like Pedri, you know, alongside... I mean, Thiago came on, but didn't really offer much more than Koke. Sideways passes, lots of touches on the ball. Took too long in moving the ball on quicker. So, you know, I could chuck in Sergio Canales. Might have been another option who's not in the squad. There's a number of players we could look at. Saul is another one. I don't want to bang on and give you a list, a list as long as a dozen of players that possibly could have gone. I don't want to even give you a list of another alternative team that I think would beat the one that Luis Enrique is picking. And most of those players are not even in the squad. So that it's how I don't know what to predict, but as you say, Pedri was the one I think that stood out. And I say the two central defenders, a couple of chances for Sweden, but other than that, they weren't really troubled. It's a hard one to judge players on. Lots of possession, but no one was penetrating. And when they did, they Morata and Moreno in the second half failed to take the chances that came their way.
How will he use Adama Traore?
It's going to be difficult, because teams are sitting back defensively. There's not a lot of space for Traore to hit them on the break, which is his strength. Pace is his strength and strength. And that's his main asset, And so exploiting pace in behind the defence. When teams are going to defend as deep as they are, he will still have that ability. He's got great skill and awareness, and he can run at defenders in a shorter distance. He'll have to take defenders on with the ball at his feet as opposed to running in behind. So, if he's not going to use him, and possibly in that game there was a reason to, then it begs the question, why take him? So it's early in the competition, very early in the competition yet, to see what plan he has for Traore. But it's going to be interesting to see what changes he makes. What changes he makes in the next game in terms of giving other players off the bench an opportunity, and whether Traore will be one of them.
Right, we'll park Spain there for now, I think, Terry. And let's have a look at England. Because, as I say, England are magnificent, bound almost certain to win it because we beat Croatia by 1-0. Got a good reception in the press. I mean, it's a boring game, if I'm being brutally honest about it. It's a game to watch in a pub with 200 people, as opposed to actually sit at home and try and pick the bones out of.
I know you mean. When you can't hear anything and you're not taking a note, you're not focusing on it, you get involved when the people in the pub get involved. I take what you're saying there.
So how good were England is the short question.
Well, the first 15, 20 minutes, I thought they looked really bright. They took the game to Croatia, and it was kind of reminiscent of games that I played in, where the mantra before kickoff, more often than not, was always turn the defence around in the first 20 minutes. So therefore, you play balls in behind the defence. You're focused on running in behind, getting players running in behind the defence, and you hope the impact would be that defenders would get wary of, chasing back towards their own goal, play deeper and allow space then, in front of them, allow space for your midfield players, allow space for your strikers to drop deep, maybe, and open the pitch and make it bigger. I found England did that. And it worked, particularly down the left flank with Raheem Sterling. And it was kind of after 20 minutes, they stopped it. Now, those deliveries were coming from Tyrone Mings, Kieran Trippier, Jordan Pickford. They were just pinging balls in behind for Sterling to run onto. And Croatia were really struggling to deal with it. It put them on the back foot. But then to the extent that by half time, Croatia were back on sort of level terms in terms of possession, keeping the ball, defending quite comfortably, not having too much to stress about. And I found that quite a drastic change from that opening 15, 20 minutes when it looked like it was inevitable that England were going to score early in the game. And England looked the far better team. But I must admit, I was disappointed with the attitude of Croatia. I'm glad, of course, but they'd never had anyone to pass the ball forward to. It was a very much a back four and a midfield five with the two wide players, Perisic in particular, barely showing any enthusiasm, any attitude to get involved in the attacking play in the final half. So therefore, they're in the attacking half and the final third, to the extent that the striker was completely isolated. So there's very little defensively for England to have to deal with. But I was slightly disappointed how much possession Croatia had for what appeared to me to be a poor team. And ultimately, England did get the winner that they deserved. Poor defending from Veselica. He nearly gets there, but he should have been there a long time before. A massive gap between him as right back and the central defenders. And he was miles away from where he should have been, to the fact that Sterling, you know, was able to finish it off before he got there. So I think rein it in. There was a few players in the second half that I had to check that were still on the pitch. The reports I read were glowing about Foden and Mason Mount. I checked, Mason Mount was still on the pitch in the second half. Calvin Phillips, people listening to this podcast know that I focus on Spanish football, La Liga. I catch up with what I can with the Premier League. I was blown away by him. You know, I haven't seen too much of Leeds this season. I'd like to see more now of him. Having seen his performance in that game, I think it was fantastic.
I don't think brilliant. He plays well. I'm certain he doesn't play there for Leeds, because he plays as the because they joke, but sort of jokingly call him the Yorkshire Pirlo. Because he plays more or less where Rice played for England. He is that in front of the back four, and not as a defensive shield. I mean, he is a defensive shield, but he also goes the other way, and he will hit quite long passes. And the role he plays for Leeds, I think Click and Dallas play that role, who are incredibly fit players, and Phillips is incredibly fit. There's is obviously. You're not having fish and chips under Bielsa, it would seem. These guys can run. And I was surprised, because when I saw the team, I thought it was Rice and Phillips as like a double pivot. And I was thinking, oh, really? So to see Phillips that advanced, and he was just an advanced midfielder, wasn't he? He was just, well, it was just.
Orthodox midfielder. Yeah. He was up, he was down, he was backwards and forwards, he was... winning tackles, he was aggressive, he showed good quality on the ball. I thought he was sensational. And as I say, I admit, honestly, that I haven't seen too much of him. But I thought in that game he was brilliant. His part in the goal was fantastic as well. He showed all the composure needed in that position to get away from his marker and then pick out a brilliant pass. I thought his performance was head and shoulders, was the best for England, and different class. I mean, defensively, again, England weren't tested. So we don't know how they're going to fare against better opposition. But I was disappointed. I kind of looked at it and I thought, why is Modric... I read yesterday it was his 60th game of the season. Mm. Why is he, I mean, knocking his tube out, playing for a team that manager doesn't want to get forward, was doing all he could to get a draw. Even when they, to the extent, they were one of those teams, John, and regular listeners will know, it probably irritates some, when they're not looking to pass forward... And then they were taking the short goal kicks and taking four or five passes. But then Modric was getting his head up, looking for someone to pass the ball forward to. And then literally was nobody there. In saying that, for his 60th game of the season, for an hour, I thought he was 70 minutes sensational. You know, when they had to chase the game, they made a few changes. I saw the changes made. It was one wide player coming on for another wide player. It was another on the opposite side. It was exactly the same. There was a different number to second striker coming on. They just didn't have we're talking about Luis Enrique not particularly having a clear plan. Croatia didn't have a clear plan. So I expected better from them because they've got players that are playing for top level clubs. I thought the two central defenders were good. Is it Vida and Caleta?
I don't know. I've never looked up how to say his name. Yeah.
So. Yep, he was good. They were good. I thought they kept Harry Kane quite quiet. So they probably need, you know, we need Harry Kane to be more involved in the game from an attacking sense. But as you said, same as Spain, first game, room for improvement from England, job done, good result. Takes the pressure off a bit in terms of the group. How far can they go in the tournament? I'm guessing already that I've seen some teams that look better. But we shall see. I mean, it's not a long tournament, but the first game to get out of the way, to get the win, fills everyone with hope and enthusiasm. It should be tapered so that we don't get carried away. But it won't, of course. It's all going back to Euro 96, which puzzles me. Did we win Euro 96?
We must have, Terry. Yeah, we must have.
We must have done, yeah. Because all these legends and heroes keep coming out, and I'm keep thinking, well, where's, you know, I know there's not many survivors at the moment, the 66 team, they keep, you know, talking about Euro 96 as if we won it. We didn't.
I watched the...
Great time. It was great fun. I'd retired by then. And it was a great place, competition to be around, wasn't it? In London, at Wembley, and you know, in the UK, in England, and it was great. But we didn't win it, so let's stop harping on about it's coming home. Euro 96, we didn't win it.
I watched a game last summer. I can't remember if it was the Spain game or maybe the Switzerland game.
Battered by Spain.
Gary Neville, an absolute roasting constantly through that game. Yeah, if he'd have been in the studio analysing himself, what are you doing, mate? Anyway, we're not talking.
That
about
was before I saw any affiliation to Spanish football. And I remember sitting there watching. I think we're getting battered in this, and they couldn't put the ball away in there.
Remember that, Spain? Anyway, let's pick up another few of the major themes from the Euros. So do you agree with me that, right, I cannot believe that Patrick Schick goal, the second goal that he scored.
Yeah.
Should we talk about nothing but the quality of that finish?
Yeah, no one could be blamed for that.
Yeah.
You'd be absolutely gutted if you're Steve Clark. If we took Ali McCoy, it was a sucker punch. It was even more than that, wasn't it? Because Scotland started brightly. They were slightly unfortunate to be one down. And the start of the second half, they were throwing, going at it, hammering songs. They made a change and they looked, you know, like they were going to, you thought they were going to get an equaliser. You know, it was good pressure, lots of bodies in the box, lots of deliveries in the penalty area. Then out of the blue, Schick hits that. It's a brilliant goal. You can't blame the keeper. You can't blame anyone for giving the ball away. When he hits it, I'm thinking, what are you doing? Oh, it's curled and it's going in. It's cleared the keeper. It's coming under the crossbar. A brilliant goal. No doubt about that whatsoever. So you can't pin. We could, if you want, pin a goal down to every goal down to an opposing player somewhere. But not in this case. I agree with you. Because, you know, hold your hand up. A real punch in the mouth for Scotland.
No one will ever shoot. That's the issue. That's why I don't like the analysis. Jack Hendry, isn't it, who had a shot. He took on a shot. It got blocked. Yeah. And then they scored the most incredible goal. That's what happened. He didn't make a mistake. He didn't kick. The number of mistakes you see defenders make playing out from the back. And that we all have to accept that in our growth mindset. Well, no, we accept that because that's part of the game.
Yeah,
a guy has a shot at the other end of the pitch, and he gets blamed for it. What? No one will ever shoot again.
No, and Patrick Schick, that was a brilliant. It was a brilliant goal.
Amazing goal.
When he hits it, I'm thinking, what are you doing?
It's a legendary. It will be a legendary goal. People will remember that strike. Thankfully, and hopefully, we'll forget.
You couldn't blame the keeper either.
No.
He's in no man's land. He's not expecting someone to shoot from a ridiculous angle and distance like that. Great technique, great mindset as well, isn't it, from Schick? We can go on about the skill, but to see it and, you know, have the foresight to see the keepers off his line and hit it with that skill, fantastic goal, brilliant goal.
Yeah. So what else have you seen in the tournament that you've liked? Who else have you been impressed by?
Belgium, I would say, so far, and Italy. Obvious ones. They're going to be obvious ones, I think. Italy were really bright. Looked to have a good unity as well, which is not always the case. And were more vibrant than we've seen Italian teams in the past. So lots of attacking play, lots of skillful play, creative play. So they were good. Belgium, I think any team that wins it has to have a player that does hit the back of the net early in the tournament and does it continually throughout the competition. And Lukaku, that looks a given, doesn't it? Give him a chance, he's going to take it. A real threat at everything that you want from a centre forward. Holding the ball up in the air, pace, finishing, running in behind. So I think in every other position, Belgium looks solid as well, you know, and full of quality, of course. So for many, this might be their last chance in that squad.
Although the World Cup is only a year away, isn't it? Because I know we keep talking about this, and people say, oh, is this Lewandowski's last chance and that kind of thing? But you think, well, yeah, there is a... Weirdly, we're back again next year with another major tournament, aren't we? So you never know.
Yeah.
Right, I think we'll leave it there for now.
Lewandowski's last chance to what? Poland to win a European championships.
Score some goals. I'll tell you what about Lewandowski.
Very generous there.
Just before we finish, when, you know, the whole Messi's playing now as we're speaking, so I don't know how he's getting on. The whole Lewandowski's performances in international tournaments put into perspective the whole criticism of Messi for not having single-handedly won a tournament. Because you look, a player of the absolute quality of Robert Lewandowski, he can't drag Poland through. He, as good as he is, he is only one man in a team, isn't he? And so the expectation that Messi can somehow win a World Cup and that somehow it's some kind of failure for not doing so. It's just nonsense.
It's a team sport. It's never been that case. Great players in the past, of which Messi and Lewandowski are, have influenced, you know, World Cup, European Championship winning teams. No doubt about that. But to do it with, I won't go so far as to say substandard players, but ordinary good players, and then you expect Lewandowski and Messi to elevate them to be in, you know, Maradona set the bar, didn't he? According to people, let me tell you, Maradona's team, which won the World Cup, had another 6, 7, 8 fantastic players. Great defence, good goalkeeper, other good strikers, but Maradona was the difference. So I think there is, you're right to say, just not forget it's a team sport. And just go back to the Christian Eriksen thing as well to finish it off, because it was awful. I mean, it was to witness that, watching a live game of football, lump in your throat stuff. I was scared, you know, that the worst was going to happen because we didn't have any information, and you're seeing the live pictures and you're fearing the worst. So thankfully, you know, God heavens, he's appears to be okay, on the mend, irrespective of whether he plays professional football again. At the end of the day, that's not that important. I mean, he's had a fantastic career. His health, family, children. I can't imagine what his wife was going through. I think great credit has to go to all the people involved, not just the medical people, but the players as well. The way the Danish players surrounded him, protected him, the witnessing those players in tears was tragic to watch. You know, the Finland players, it must have been terribly difficult for them. I have no idea how those players came back out and played such a short time after. So I think, you know, obviously send out, I'm sure everybody sends their best wishes to a popular footballer as well. Yeah. You know, I know you play for Spurs. I know people, I'm sure people are not going to accuse me of being biased, but he is one of those popular players that has never offended anyone. He's a good sport, a good player. And, you know, I'm sure everybody, you know, join us in wishing him a full recovery.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Right. Well, enjoy the football, everybody. And thank you to the Patreons. Thank you to Jeremy, who's our latest Patreon. And watch out. I think we might do a special offer. Have a look on the Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL. It might be next week by the time I get round to it. But have a look around and we might be able to sort of do a summer sale and knock a couple of quid off to keep people there through the summer. So we'll be doing some Patreon stuff and we'll be talking about the Euros and everything else. That's it. That's what we do, basically. We come on Zoom and talk about football.
We're still on lockdown. Join us.
Right. Enjoy the football and we'll see you for another podcast soon.